Greetings, everybody, and welcome to this free summer school lecture. I'm Janet Small from the Centre for Open Learning. We're here to hear Dr. Tessa Darling talk about seeing the world as an African language speaker. Dr. Darling is an academic here at UCT with a PhD in African languages, and she did the surprising thing of her producing a thesis on humour, on Kosa humour in this case, but still it's quite a feat. So I'm going to introduce you to Tessa in sort of three of her personas. I'm sure she has a few others, but she's an academic, as I've said, and does a lot of publishing in journals, journal articles. She's also an adult educator and a language teacher, and for many years she ran a successful company called African Voices, which developed quite, well-respected and now classical texts and accompanying CD-ROMs on learning language, and it also has been used for Zulu as well. Through this institution, she also ran several courses for institutions around the Cape, trying to get people to take up language learning and, I think, get involved in communication. And another of her many talents is public communication and commentating, and for that she's written a lot in popular press. She's written in newspaper articles, magazines, and has done radio interviews. And she also, in 2009, won a provincial Arts and Culture Award for promoter of multiculturalism. And her other last claim to fame I'm going to mention is that she was a personal tutor for Helen Zille. So, thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Janet. Actually, when she was singing my praises, I felt like I should have a praise singer. Like, oh, yeah! Just to start the proceedings, which is always great. Hiya! And it is wonderful to be praised, and I think, I hope that this lecture will make you praise or see the beauty of African languages, as well as the difficulties we have in this country of having so many and having a different outlook on the world because of our languages. And this particular theory that we see the world, or the way we see the world is shaped by our language, it actually is an actual theory, my theory, which is mine, and it's Sapir Whorf, and they came up with this theory that human beings don't live in the objective world alone, nor alone in the world of social activity, but are very much at the mercy of the particular language which has become the medium of expression for their society. And I think this came home to me very closely. This last week I was in the Eastern Cape and I was asking some kids some mathematical, I failed maths, but I'm still interested in why I failed it, because it was in my language. And I was asking these kids, well, how do you count? And they can't speak a word of English, but they were counting in English. And it made me think there's something happening with language when your language and the way you count doesn't seem to be able to contain a kind of Western way of counting that is required of you, and that might influence your abilities and the way you are taught in education. So, I thought before we go into African languages, we could just realize that this particular phenomenon of seeing the world through your own language, we could look at, for example, Scottish tartle. So, it's a Scottish tartle, a Scottish verb meaning to hesitate while introducing a person due to having forgotten his or her name. You know, you didn't have a problem if you didn't have a problem. So that's to tartle. So the Scottish, clearly, that's important for them, that you have that problem. You have a special word for it. So when languages have a special word for something, you realize that language or society sees that as important. And jayas, from Indonesian, meaning a joke so poorly told, and so unfunny that one cannot help but laugh. I'm sure we know many like that. And then Ilunga, very interesting, from the Luba language of the Democratic Republic of Congo, a person who is ready to give any abuse the first time it occurs, to tolerate it the second time, but to neither forgive nor tolerate a third time. This might give us some insights into what is happening there. But do we practice wabi-sabi It's a lovely Japanese word, a way of living that emphasizes finding beauty in imperfection and accepting the natural cycle of growth and decay. So beautiful that the Japanese have one word to encompass this concept. Learning an African language for me, starting off when I was 24, all those many years ago, and you start with greetings, and they normally spend about 3 weeks teaching you greetings because they are so interesting. Now, unfortunately, I teach my students greeting and they go to the townships and they come back and they say, I said, Ula Pila, Usta Pila. And they say, I am the right, okay, shut up. And so we've shortened it a bit. But in the rural areas, and this was an area I was in, Kaiskamahuk, Kutkobakobo, they still greet in this beautiful way. And if you analyze the greetings, what they actually mean, it's not about being fine. It's really not about being fine or being better than ever. No, bro, how are you now? I'm fine. And I'm wonderful and magnificent. Meanwhile, you've just had a gallstone and stuff. Yeah, you just don't do that. You just say, which I think is so beautiful, that you are. So how are you? Kiting in Sotho. Ujwang, kiting. I exist. Dikhona. So you don't have to say you're fantastic. The other greetings just say, I'm alive. Biapila, are you alive? Wendiapila. And this happens across Africa where people don't say that they're fantastic or better than ever or even fine. They just say, I'm there. I'm there, bro. I'm just there. So I think that's fair enough and a much more sincere way of talking about your health. And what we were talking about earlier, which was praising yourself through your ancestors, that after the greetings, just because you're possibly not feeling that well or so great about yourself, that you always have in African languages that memory of your ancestors and that they are part of you. And you don't forget that. And recently I always listen to Radio Khosa, but they've been having this competition where they ask people, ukuzithutha, to praise yourself. And little kids are praising themselves according to their ancestors. So if you are Leggett, you're going to say, I'm Leggett of so-and-so, whose father did that, whose mother did that, who jumped over this river, who planted those fields, who was a fantastic scientist. And remembering all of those people. So I thought that seeing as we've just lost one of our greatest, and he's now an ancestor, just knowing some of his praises, which were so kaulela, leapfrogger, golomstila, strutter. These are clan praises and nicknames of the Madibas, and therefore of Nelson Mandela. And when people used to praise him, they would be saying these things, calling his ancestors to him. And just to get the background, Noma, one of Mandela's ancestors, became chief by defeating his elder brother Hlanga. So that's because he seized Hlanga's right to succession. Noma was then called. So Kaulela, leapfrogger, he leapt over that one. And Golomsila, strutterer. Somebody struts because he was strutting around proudly for having done that. And so you never forget those people, those strutterers, those ones who sort of got there quickly. Another very interesting thing that has recently come that I'd like to write a paper on is the fact that you don't compare in African languages, and not the Southern African languages that I know. We're always comparing ourselves to somebody else. And many of the students I see, oh, so-and-so's doing so well, but I'm just so dwarf and I'm not getting it, and I don't know why. And I'm like, oh my God, and she's so clever. And you think, why are you comparing yourself so much? And I'm sure that that's something that I really loved, as I was very average, coming to an African language where comparisons weren't something that you did. So degrees of comparison, for example, are different and almost untranslatable. In English, it's good, better, best, and bad, worse, worst. In African language, it's good, bad, very bad. So you don't have to go into that if you're comparing it against somebody else. Inhle, kakhulu. So I think you're going to be good. So if you just exist, you're probably good. And then if you really do something good, like leapfrog over somebody to get to the heir, to be the heir of the throne, you can be very good. And in Sotho the same, inkle, and I love the Sotho inkle nyana, to put a little ana there at the end, a little good. Inkle ahu, very good. So it's just saying everything's good, some's a little bit better, but not comparing it like that. And we have a real problem in African languages when we do translations, because we realize English texts are full of these comparisons and we have to work out ways of doing it. What I love is that worse and worse is now getting incorporated into English, and it means better. It just means anything that's more. So, for example, I heard somebody say, oh, Tessa, we understand that. Worse and worse, go with the noon time. So, Tessa is very helpful to me. Worse and worse, now I have a child. She meant more so, now I have a child. Or, you can mean worse and worse. Worse and worse, e toilets are zico. You know, we're struggling over here. Worse and worse, now that there are no toilets, or whatever. So, worse and worse is just any kind of modifier to mean more than. And later on I'll show you how we're doing that more and more in African languages. The whole notion of opposites as well in African languages, it's really so interesting to see what a language has an opposite for. So we have big, small, but there are many things like usual and strange. You don't have that in African languages, you just have usual and the normal unusual. You know, this is the one that I like particularly, deep and shallow. You can't say shallow in an African language. You just can't say it. You say not deep. So it's either deep or it's not deep. So it's confined. So the most important thing is depth. Shallow isn't very important. It's defined by not being deep. So in Zulu, I'm Zurang. So these little children I was playing with, I took the whole village to the hotel swimming pool, much to the surprise of the guests there, and they just wanted to know, like, Ainzuranga is not deep. Is it not deep? And that's, I kept on wanting to say it's shallow, and afterwards everyone told me, no, we don't have a word for shallow, it's just not deep. And also a shallow person would not be there. They just say a shallow person is a careless person, a katali. So careless. And again, you start seeing that when people start to use English words, there's a conceptual gap or a feeling that in our language, we don't say that. Health is an area that I've been researching a lot in African languages, because many medical practitioners say to me, we're not getting through to our patients and we use interpreters, we're not getting through. And I was doing some research in Deep Slut, and I came across this sign, Ukutwasiswa, which is actually what happens to you when you're becoming a healer, a traditional healer, and you go down to the river. But it's also associated with feelings of psychotic disturbances of your mind, and so this is now indicated as an illness. And then erectile dysfunction, and women who can't have children, and everything else, the sign says, what I like about it. Everything else that you have wrong with you. But the headline was that feeling of being unwell in your mind. And that's something that we would find very hard to translate into English. And many people feel that they are labeled as psychotic when actually they're just having a disturbance of becoming a healer. And just to show how health is defined by who you are and how you can get well, by following a particular group of people who are known to have certain medicines. This is Silalelama Mpono Mtagati. And this was in Langa, and I thought it was a very rich sign. Because Mtagati also means a charmer. Hey, Mtagati, charmer. And a chemist. I like chemist spelt like that, who's got a slightly different meaning to me. And it means that you're chasing, you thought your problem was little. You thought your problem was little. I'm telling you now, your problem is massive. Your problem is massive. Can you imagine psychologists saying that to you? You know, psychologists, you haven't got a small problem. Come in, you've got a massive problem. And we are allowed to say these very difficult things in African languages by way of metaphor. So we use many, many metaphors. You are chasing a big bill, thinking it was, you were chasing, yeah, thinking it was a calf, so you got your things mixed up. The other thing that the Diabetes Society asked me to have a look at was the notion of risk in African languages. They had a problem with telling patients, you've got to follow this diet and behave like this, otherwise there's a risk. And so I did my research and found that for Nguni languages, the word for risk is Ngozi, Sotho, Xhosa, and Ngozi and Xhosa are also used to translate accident and danger. So it's when you have one word that is used to translate many different words in English, a problem does arise because you're only getting one meaning across to people sometimes. The actual Xhosa word for risk is umlipeko, but not a single person I interviewed used it. They said, oh, by the way, iko, now there is that word. And then I said, would you ever use it? No. They wouldn't use that word. It's a dangerous situation from which one narrowly escapes. So everybody prefers to say, you stand and say riskini, in a risk. And I found very interesting, I was trying to get to them, but when the doctor tells you this about food, and then this one woman, she's actually doing social work here at UCT, she said, you see, Tess, the issue is food is never dangerous. If you say this food will be a risk to you, this food is dangerous, how can food be dangerous? How can the nurse tell me to eat chicken without skin because that is dangerous when the chicken was alive, it needed its skin? It was dangerous not to have it. So, you know, think about it. So she said to me that the issue of food being dangerous, any type of food being dangerous, was problematic to her as a social worker as well. And looking again at traditional medical discourse, sometimes the doctors complained and said, the patients just say yes. They just say yes. And then I went to look at traditional discourses and found that in a traditional discourse, you do always agree with the doctor's diagnosis, even if you don't. So we have vuma. So you go in, you consult the traditional healer, and he or she suggests to you a particular reason for your malady. So, for example, you've got sore knees because your neighbors don't like you, or you've got sore knees because you're kneeling on this hard floor. But they ask, we are vuma, do you agree? And you must say, eh, wendi avuma. You must say that, even if you disagree. In your head, you'll think, that's rubbish, I'll go to another healer, or we are a clinic, I'll go to the clinic next time. But that is part of the discourse, a way of speaking with healers. And we have problems of translation, which are found in medical texts. Ukuhamba hamba was used to translate mobility, but was back-translated to casual sex. Umulalange inklu and umrelwe was used to translate confined to bed, but has connotations of punishment. And B was used by people with chronic diseases, was not the real meaning of being confined to bed. Today somebody asked me, how do you translate sexual harassment? And my colleague said to me, you know, that's an interesting one. Ukubansa was used to be when a man would come and pinch your bum. And then we always thought that was okay. She said, now it's sexual harassment, ukubansa. So it's like how you reinterpret the word, but it wasn't originally that. Of course, within African languages, this is the whole thing of naming. Which if somebody has a name, it's probably not the name they're going to use because you're drawing attention to yourself. So people have other ways of calling things. So ukuhlonipha is to avoid saying the syllable in your in-laws' names, avoid bringing attention to yourself. So for example, if I'm married to Mr. Wise, I won't say despise, I won't say lies, flies, or energize, because those sounds will start to bring attention to me and bring the wrath of the ancestors. So you have to find ways of saying it differently. And although this tradition is dying out, this is what happened to a newly married woman, although this is dying out, the notion of calling a thing as it is, straight, is still problematic. You need to go around things. Like Trevor Noah says, you go that way. find another way of saying it. What I love about African languages is the lack of sentiment in them. My mother was particularly a person who hated sentiment. When you put sentiment in, happiness disappears. And I think that that is something that appealed to me in African languages, that you can't really be sentimental. If you're going to be sentimental, you say, oh, sweetie, you're going to start using English. Because this language is very straightforward. Like when somebody dies, you say, akuhlanga lunge hlanga. It has not happened, not having happened. That's a condolence. That's condolences. I really like it. It's happened. Uswelekile, if you talk about somebody, they're dead. You don't say, you know, they've passed on. They're lacking. They're lacking in our lives. And somebody said to me about love, when I said, and what about saying you love somebody in African language? Hi, Paul, my boyfriend must tell me he loves me in English. Not, and this was actually Venda. She said, if a guy told me he loved me in Venda, no, I wouldn't take him seriously. And that's quite sad, really. But another girl said to me, it's also the way these American students, like, oh my God, my mom spoke to me, and she was like, told me about when, oh, they were doing taboos and periods and menstruation. She told me all about it when I was 5, and it was so, like, traumatic. But then she showed me pictures, and we really bonded together, my mom and I. And this classic girl in the class said, you know what my mom said to me? Hi, sana, kuna, sana, kuna. Be strong, be strong. That was it. That was her whole introduction to it. Another thing about African languages that can give you insights into the way people think is the grammar. For example, the passive voice is preferred over the active voice. So you don't say, I've got heart disease. You say, ndiphethwe sisifo sentliziyo. I'm held by the disease of the heart. Ndibhujelwe ngunina. I've been died for by my mother. People don't die. You are died for by them. So you're the one who goes through the death. They don't. And I like that. But I really like ndiphoswe ibus. I was missed by the bus. So it does take a little bit of responsibility off you about getting the bus. Verbal extensions in African language are the most complex, difficult aspect of the languages, but without them, we can't speak. And I'll just give you some example. Kurufa, can you say kurufa? Right. So kurufi, this is, you know, like screwing in a screw, DIY. Okay. So kurufisa. So you're going to help somebody screw in a screw. Okay. All right. Kurufisana. That's to help one another do it. Kurufoleha. That's become unscrewed. And there's a whole verbal extension that you put down at the end, that the ella, the ana, the isa. They are modifying the verb. So that means undo. Kurufisisa, screw intensively. And kurufshwa, to be screwed, so that's the passive. So when people say, you know, these languages, they've got a very small vocab, eh? They've got a very small vocab. They can't say a lot of things. You can. I mean, these are the kind of things I learn from people. I actually once even had a student who went to the garage and greeted the garage attendant, and she came back and she said to me, no, you know what? The guy doesn't greet properly, eh? I said, no, this is my teacher's notes, and you didn't respond correctly to it. So the sort of the arrogance sometimes of people come, they've got no word for please. You know, meanwhile, there are thousands of different words to be polite. So, like with these verbal extensions, we use them the whole time in African languages. Oh, kurufaka, to screw with abandon. Imagine if you're an African language speaker, and it happens throughout the continent, that it is not your language that is valued. Other people's languages are valued. English is valued. And around you, in our geosemiotic landscape, the pictures, the signs all around us are not in your language. They are print poor languages. So English is a print rich. If I look around here, packed up, locked up, switched off, nothing is translated. Exit. Nothing is translated into an African language. And most African language speakers live in a world where their language is not pasted up around them. So, for example, you take those signs, and I love this international terminal only, no access to domestic terminal, that is now just taken out of its place and put in the township to stop the wind blowing in. So the words have a different, they are, it's called out of context. It no longer indexes what it's meant to index. So we just see words all around us. And then what African language speakers do, they're bombarded with English all over the place. And this English takes them time to realize what it means, or you half get the meaning, and so you decide, I'm going to give it my own meaning. So, for example, our 10 days are people who won't go. I'm sure you've all just had family like that saying, hey, our 10 days, abai. So, those are people who come and they say they're coming for 10 days and they're there for 3 months. And you've got to educate their children. E-treatment is any kind of pill. Anesthetic treatment can be Panado, Disprin, because you hear about treatment, getting treatment. E-support is a government grant. It's no longer support of your family, or so support gets the sense of just being a government grant. 3 liters is an imaginary child. When you're going for the child grant, you know, because there's no such thing as 3 liters. You get 1 liter, 2 liters. I think you can get 3 liters now. But apparently it's something that you get, you bribe somebody to do so you can get, you have a dinner 3 liters. So it's a 3 liter. Doesn't really exist, but you get the money for it. Worse, as I said, is better. Late is dead. And e-remote is any kind of control. What? Una remote to test. Una remote. She's got control. And kappa, that is from somebody looking at a tracksuit and seeing the people turn their backs. And this woman was telling me that they had an argument. And when she kappa, her husband did this kappa on her. And I said, kappa, and I looked it up in the dictionary. And finally she got me the tracksuit. She said, that's what he did to me. And so you take something from a tracksuit and you bring it into your lexical, your vocabulary. And it means something else. But you also write what you hear. In this particular study I was doing in Deep Slit, people hearing things, but they're not seeing it written down. And this was Baroni Deke and Creech from 3 months upwards. And that's just how people, how she obviously heard it, upwards. And that's how my students write closer, with that kind of spelling, just as they hear it. But they don't try that hard. Sawing down taller here, I was with a particularly tall man at the time, and he said, taller for sawing do they need, and it was actually sawing done, taylor here. So after when we found out, sawing done, taylor here. So you get the accent by looking, and these are called peripheral literacies by a particular scholar who talks about literacies that exist outside normative literacies, so where people, everybody else can understand it because that's the way they speak. But outside this particular economy, it has no credibility. So I wouldn't have been able to go to a tailor with that. And I think the future of African languages is that people are going to make use of English words, but in the process, they're going to lose a bit of heaven, because sometimes the way of seeing the world as an African language speaker, you don't see it like an English speaker, but you are in an English speaker's world. So you have to find the English, you have to use the word from that English word. Just the same way as, you know, je ne sais quoi, ennui, or French words where we just, that's much more French. And we will use the French word. But in the meantime, you're going to lose a bit of heaven. And I wrote an article on this, so I'm quoting myself. Heaven is still isiZulu in African language, and Xhosa particularly, but weather is no longer imoZulu, the condition or state of heaven. Imo is condition. Weather is just iweza. So it somehow happened that imoZulu, the condition, had just become iweza, because you're kind of in this English word. Hey, Johnny, iweza, not imoZulu. And then I think that in this world that you live in, people are going to gain some stress because you're in a world in which stress is such a word, and sexy, and surprise, and all these very kind of active words. So when I did my research with 100 different informants, the adjectives for which Xhosa speakers are using the English word, so I gave them the Xhosa word equivalent and asked them to choose, happy. I was so surprised with that, that people used English word happy instead of the Xhosa word onwabile or vuya. I say, unjani lomntwana, how is this child, a laughing child? They'd say, oh, happy. So it's become kind of different. Surprised, nobody could say in Xhosa. They couldn't use the Xhosa word. So, una surprise, u surprised. Sexy, that was hilarious. I showed a picture of a very sexy woman. All my male English-speaking friends, I asked, how would you describe this woman? Everybody said sexy. Ask African language speakers, some said she was fishing, she was a whore, she was dirty, I had all these different things, but nobody used the Xhosa word for her. One or two said she was pretty, but the majority would say, u sexy. So, which makes you think, the notion of being sexy is kind of English. Stressed is particularly, nobody would use the Xhosa word for, just worried. And that leads us to the sense of conceptual gaps, where you have a concept in one language that can't be translated into the other language. So, whereas katazekile is correctly translated into English as worried, it does not include the concomitant frenzy that comes with urban living, and therefore speakers opt for the short, unambiguous stress. The same with depression. A lot of people used katazekile for depressed. So generally worry was somebody who was just worried, depressed, could have all those meanings. And now people say, and I heard somebody say, di depressed ekile. So they used a whole lot of different extensions at the end. And as far as sexy goes, even the word sex in Xhosa is referred to indirectly as isondo, the corner of the sleeping blanket. So to have sex is ukwabelana ngesondo, to share the corner of the sleeping blanket together, which I think is very romantic. So how does one make an adjective out of this? Well, you don't. And in fact, most of my students said to me that when they're talking about sex and sex education, please don't talk in Xhosa or Zulu or Sotho or Venda to us about that. It's so rude. It's so not. And I said, why? And they said, well, either people use such big euphemisms to speak about, so, you know, like Zuma referred to the woman's vagina as the place that her father's kraal. You know, that was a very indirect way of saying, you know, I had to go and pleasure her in her father's kraal. So you can either do that, or they are used to swear. So words for anatomical parts of the body, people use that, you know, to swear. So you wouldn't really want to. So we prefer to use English because it doesn't seem like you're swearing at me. Because if the doctor talks about tone or whatever, then you think, yeah. See? And finally, why John 14 is a cabbage. And this is the way people create pictures or hear something. So, for example, John 14 is the passage in the Bible where every illiterate preacher in the township would know, in my father's, trouble me not, in my father's house, there are many mansions. And apparently you go, on a Sunday, what people like to do is go around, bro, I see, we'll find a nice sermon. You know, we're going to find a nice sermon. We're going to find a nice person to listen to. And he said, you go from shack to blooming shack in the townships, and everybody's doing John 14. You can't find them talking about any other verse of the Bible. It's always John 14, because they're illiterate, and that's the one they learned off by heart. So I asked, but I still don't understand how John 14 is a cabbage. So he said, well, a cabbage is something that you can afford. So most nights when you get home, you'll have a cabbage. And you can think, oh, I hope it's Kentucky. Has he ever eaten Kentucky? But it's not Kentucky Fried Chicken when you get home. It's not stew. It's not, you know, amanina, nothing. It's just cabbage. So you expect a cabbage. It's boring. So anything that's boring is a John 14. So that seeing the world through the eyes of an African language speaker, it's, you go, whoa! Yeah, that's an interesting way of perceiving the world. And I do listen to the radio and I do listen to people speak, and there are constantly these creative ways of interpreting the universe, using one thing to mean another thing. So I think if you were in education, in any educational field, you would use metaphors a lot. You would use those ways of referring, talking about one thing by using another thing that people were familiar with. So that is the end of this talk, and if there are any questions, I'd be happy to. Cabbages.
Because they're sweet.
Oh, wow. I was really. So the crocs, the shoes. Sure. So they're also cabbages.
Well, I've heard that.
No, I'm sure it's true.
The noise.
Yeah. That is lovely. It's the noise. As you say, it's associated with the one thing. The one little feature is associated. No, definitely.
The old fashioned crocs.
Yeah, the old fashioned crocs. Brilliant. Yes.
Can you say a little bit more about that kind of what you implied as a cliche about cross the word for please?
Yes. And it is a cliche in to me. I have students every year and they always say they've got no words for please. And the thing is in African languages you use a word ditela. I don't know if you can say ditela. It's a dental click, ditela, and it means I politely request. So you wouldn't say, please could I have that. There is a word neda, which means help as well, but I couldn't locate, and you also use the subjunctive mood. You must go well. You should go well. So you use the subjunctive mood. I don't know if you know grammar, but it's a mood that is already polite when you're in it, of course. So you change the final vowel to an E, and we know already. So if I say, hamba, that's kind of rudish. Hamba, go. If I say, uambe, you go, you should go, please go, then we're getting that please without another word. Without another word, please. Just by modifying the prefix and the suffix of the verb. That is so interesting, because what she or he is doing is translating directly from their own language. Because at school, they would have been taught that's must or ought or should. So they're thinking must is the same as please, because in African language, it is the same as please. So it sounds rude when it comes out, but it's actually not. You must give me some money. You must please. I suppose it is upon every learn of another language to learn the politeness rules of that language. But I can tell you, I have got third year students who, in their orals, the lecturers who evaluate them say, they're fine, they're quite fluent, but they come across as rude. And I think that we do, as second language speakers of a language, come across as rude, because learning those little niceties is sometimes hard for us to remember. That's a very good point.
Isn't that the case with most foreign languages? Right?
Yes, I think so. I think most foreign languages, it's hard to get that sense of being polite.
There's a rhythm and an intonation in every language.
Yes.
You've got African speakers speaking English.
Yes.
And they can't get the intonation or the rhythm right.
Yes.
But the other way around, it should also be like that.
It is.
So if you speak, if I have to speak African language, yes. I can't speak.
Yes.
I will translate into a different rhythm.
Rhythm.
You as an English speaking person, but you've got to get it right. So how do you get it right?
What? No, but it's true. It's true. And I, I love the humility of your statement, because it's absolutely true. We're always thinking, oh, their accents, oh, they can't write well. You know, which one of us has ever tried to write anything in Xhosa outside? You know, so it's true. And one of the best ways we start off is learning some songs, which I do with my students, just to get the rhythm of like, you know, we sort of teach them songs like that, or you kind of get the songs. And the other one is absolutely to have to spend time with people in a village, which what UCT has kindly given me money to do, is to take the students, plunk them in, and that is all they listen to every single day. But it's to be sensitive to those rhythms. We can tone mark because they're tonal languages. So itanga can mean a pumpkin, it can mean a thigh, it can mean a cattle kraal, depending on if it's high tone, low tone, falling tone. So you can read tone marks, but I find most of my students who do well do it from speaking, yeah, spending time. It's John 14, but yeah, you got to do it.
If I say Kina Kumari, does that mean anything to you? North Soto. Kina Kumang.
Probably means Kina
Kumang.
What time is it? Yes, Kina Kumang. What time is it? Yes.
Yes. I was teaching at the technicon, and it was getting over time, and I was trying to tell these students, you know, how to do something. So I heard them say Kina Kumani. I said, "Four."
Well, exactly. I think when you can speak a language, but that whole notion of time, that just reminds me, that's another kind of English-speaking thing. You know, God gave whites watches and Africans time kind of joke, you know? It's the kind of joke you... And you think, well, is there any truth in that? Is there an issue that we don't talk about time in the same way? But time used to be referred to as to what was happening. So the little horns of the snail, when they come out, you know, what happened in the day, what you see around you, you could refer to time in that way. But people say, but they can't, they don't have a word for late. You know, and I said, no, we do. Late. Yeah. So you do have a word. But when I was in the Eastern Cape, when I was doing my research in the 80s, and I was with these Irish nuns, and they used to speak Xhosa with an Irish accent. Very interesting. Sweet. And then I said, so when's this service going to start? And she said, when the people arrive, when everyone's here. So I said, what time? To the nun. She said, you've got to relax your test. You're not prepared, you. It's when the people are here. Praise the Lord. Be glad for your youth, child. So I loved it, you know. It starts when everyone's there. So. Yes.
So speaking of language, they say, can be able to.
Can be able to is so fascinating to me.
Why is it?
Kwazi uku, because it is very possible in African languages to use a double can potential marker. And they're just translating it directly. They're translating it directly from a Christian saying, I can be able to help him. That's nga and kwazi uku. Hey, Jen? All right. Nga kwazi uku. Can, nga is can. And then kwazi uku is I can know to do it. And they're just back translating. So most of those errors, like saying he for she and she for he, it's just that our African languages don't have gender like that. So people say, my father, she is sick. My father, she can be able to. Yeah. Because if you go back to, and also using the continuous tense. I was having a problem, because you talk about past events that you had using a continuous tense.
Is the concept of more and less a difficult one?
It's very, like I said at the beginning,
talking about quantities of work. I'd like you to do less of this so that you'll have time to do more of that.
All degrees like that, those comparative, you know, more work, yeah. Less work. It's very difficult to translate into the African languages I know. And before this lecture, I actually thought, I don't want to be wrong, because it's a new thing I'm investigating, and people, my colleagues were saying, it's a nightmare, the more less thing.
because they all do translations. So they have to say on top of, ngaphezu, ngaphansi, but then sometimes it loses its meaning. So yeah, that's why they say more. So you'll hear a word like, oh, utana like utel washop like more ngoku, you know, more or tufuna ugumbona more. Yeah. Yes.
Do you know where the origin of sharp sharp comes from?
I don't know where sharp sharp, the same as ayoba. You know, like it's there are people at UCT who are searching it. It's called you know, urban language varieties, slang varieties, and they come in and they go up. But sharp has definitely stayed. Sharp. Does anybody here know? Sharp sharp.
Soweto slang.
Soweto slang. But where that came from originally, you know, I don't know.
It's sharp, you know. It sounds like one sharp, you know. It's
cool, sharp.
Cool, sharp.
Sharp,
sharp.
Yeah,
sharp.
Why sharp? Maybe it's a blunt.
Fikile Barila said, Bafana, Bafana, should
get
a new name. Has anyone suggested a new name to you?
On Radio Kosa, they've been really mean. Maluza, Maluza, things like that. You know, what's they called? The Madiba rainbows, things like that. Yeah. Obviously, advertisers like the Ama prefix. You know, what about the Amazing? You know, I think that would be nice.
I think it's quite grasping the gender of the pronouns.
Yes.
I try and volunteer with
the
because I don't know what they used to.
So you mean he, she?
Yes.
So we don't have he, she in African languages.
What do they don't?
No, you'd have to say, put the person's, like the mother or the girl. If I say, kuyahamba, I don't know if she's going or he's going.
Oh, right.
Even if I said, yena kuyahamba, and I used an absolute pronoun, plus I wouldn't know. I'd have to say, utata yena kuyahamba. Then I'd know it's dad.
Oh.
So it's amazing to me that African language speakers are able so often to get it right. And we, of course, get it wrong because it's the he or she. No, he or she is high tone and you is low tone.
Yes, you spoke about the word
in the yes, for risk.
Yes, there's another word,
quiet,
which is end.
Oh, yes.
So you never hear also people saying quiet
anymore. They just go end.
I was amazed at one point. We wanted to get a goat for a specific function at home, back in Dibaza in the Eastern Cape. So we drove to some farms near Grahamstown, and the owner was a white man. I'll never forget it to this day. It must have been about 70 years ago. That man never said a word of English.
Wow.
I was amazed.
And kissing his clothes.
Especially, kwaye.
Bakundi. He used that quiet.
Yeah.
But the Amakos.
Amakos, I would say end.
End.
Yeah.
It's so interesting. And, then, you know, and it almost marks you as a second language speaker. Even if you're speaking fluently, if you use quiet, like, I think I'm close. I don't know. If she's really close, she's going to say end.
Something about that, your title now, seeing the word as a second language speaker. On the other hand, most of us that speak like that are what are called amakhanuka.
Yes. Yes, I have.
Amakhanuka would be now people who've left the rural areas and moved into the urban areas permanently. And so the language is not pure.
Yes.
The culture is not pure. You know, everything is not pure.
Yes.
I'm not sure what the real meaning of the word Hanuka is. We have to get a
Khoisa
dictionary for that.
There is the greater dictionary of Khoisa, brilliant.
But generally speaking, for me now as an African language speaker, seeing the word as an African language speaker, I think generally as African language speakers in South Africa, you know, language, that's just one of the best indicators of how we see ourselves as, I don't know, almost defeated.
Yes. Is that
because there's nothing about us that is pure anymore. I mean, even our language.
Yeah, it's...
You know, like you were making examples.
Yeah.
Of everywhere we go.
Even in the rural areas with these kids. Everyone. And this child couldn't say hello in English, but just counting. And,
That's how we see the world. And to make it worse, again, worse. To make it worse, and this is here at home in Africa.
Yeah.
We are not in Europe or in America. And yet we feel defeated right here at home.
It is so interesting and sad too, and I think really telling that a major chair of African languages is being filled by a fantastic German scholar at UCT. Wonderful work he's doing and everything, but you kind of think, and my colleagues and I sit around going, oh, why is it not us, you know, Tina, Alfuna Lache, But it's true, it's almost like an African defeatism. It's like, oh, well, it's going to get colonized. Our language is getting colonized. We were colonized. Maybe we need activists. Yes.
You see now, if you even watch the way, education, people don't value education, sending your child to a township school. That's long gone.
Yeah.
Kids are born in the townships, their parents live in the townships, but everybody wants to send their child to a school outside of the township.
Yeah.
People don't believe, I'm talking about us Xhosa, people don't believe that, teaching your child Xhosa is going to be anything.
They call it a domestic appliance.
What is Xhosa going to do?
You domestic appliance. She's like a toaster.
So then the next generation, we would say then, again, you would know these terms, the next generation are being more Englishized.
Yes, Anglicized. So it's true, and that we call our language now is endangered. So it has got into a category of endangered language, and then you get, I think it's threatened, endangered, and then like extinct, it's not far away when one generation is not learning it at school, not learning through the medium of the language. Yeah, so it's a few generations away, 100 years, and that's it.
So why didn't they
make them
do it at school?
I find that,
I want to comment.
Yes.
I don't want to talk politics, but a few years ago, children could learn what is Xhosa as a language at school, even though their home language was English or Afrikaans.
Yes.
From 1994, that was not allowed. And it stopped a lot of white and coloured children learning Xhosa.
They made it really difficult. It hasn't been not allowed. It's at Weinberg School, a number of schools, Westerford, they have good CASA departments. But it's really difficult in the timetable. The curriculum has been bumped up so you fail it. I mean, they've made it really difficult to pass. So even mother tongue speakers struggle to pass that first additional language course.
But from next year or the year after, it's going to be a compulsory subject for matric.
It's going to be compulsory, I think, for at the first year foundation phase in two? For the little ones.
But
no, I think that slowly it's going to be introduced slowly. But my issue with that is who's going to teach it? Because you need to be a good trained teacher to teach it. So.
And where are they going to use it?
And where are they going to get those teachers? Because teaching a second language is a skill.
What fascinates me is the pronunciation of African languages.
Yes.
And then I learned that Dr. Shepherd apparently is first learned to wrote down the Xhosa.
Yes.
And the French in
Lesotho.
And the paint of the Swami or Sutu.
Yes.
Were written by the French, I think.
Yes.
Xhosa. So your vowels are different.
It's yes.
An African name.
Yes.
The O-E sound. And you've got pretty
mispronounced. Well, and
can you comment on that?
I think that is a sort of, we live with our history, and even in our orthographies,
when we are at mercy to who colonized us. And the French, of course, were much better at learning African languages than others. I mean, the Scottish were very good. But those systems, I can't comment much on the Sotho system, but I know what you mean. Those vowels, if you see a Sotho vowel, it's not the same as a Xhosa vowel. And it's going to, unless you know, oh, that's a Sotho name, you're not going to know which vowel. So it would be much nicer to harmonize them. Or A, yes. But except you won't get a combination of vowels in Nguni languages. So you'll know if you get a combination of vowels that's Sotho. So that I could help you on. Of course, I hate two vowels sitting together, and it will do something to them. It will never be two vowels sitting together. Yeah. Thank you.